Driving the culture forward, this is Hype Beast Radio. My name is Ben Rosen, and today we have an illustrious all-beard panel. I've got our sports editor, Beards. Bob Marshall, a.k.a. right off the bat, a.k.a. DJ Bobbito Marciano, a.k.a. I mean, you could take it from here.
What's up, y'all? Just happy to be here. Thanks for that was a beautiful intro.
I try. And then we've also got BD himself, Baron Davis, in the building. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, dog. I'm here. The Beards is definitely in the building.
Yeah, it kind of feels like our two beards are hanging out with their dad.
Yeah, like just any moment, you're just going to say, like, I'm just going to turn this podcast around if you guys don't act right, you know? Like, I just feel it coming.
Well, me, man, nah. You know, you got a red beard, so, you know, I don't know about dude with a red beard.
Trust this one.
This conversation can go anywhere.
You'd be a wild card.
Yeah, when the light hits it, it gets the tinkle of the ginger in it.
Wow, thank you. That's a high praise right there. Anyway. Let's get on subject. We're happy to have you in the building. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. You've had a really busy week, man. You've done the Breakfast Club yesterday. You're on like a bit of a media tour.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I don't know why.
Are you just kind of hopping in the Uber wherever it takes you?
I come to New York. I got a good team of people, so you know it'd be cool to come and like pop in and say what's up. You know, usually it's just friends and stuff, but it's cool to do like Breakfast Club and, you know, all the little interviews and do a little media run out here. But, you know, I just be wanting to chill. I want to chill, go shopping, walk around the streets, just be a New Yorker when I'm here. I don't really get that much time.
Have you gotten any time since you got here?
Nah.
Is that why you were checking out the store next door here?
I went to the, the little Indian store, cowboy and Indian store. I was gonna give me a couple belt buckles, and some
the big
hats.
Things.
Yeah, that's my new swag. I'm on my cowboy swag. So, just checking out the store. I'm about to, for the fall, have a whole new look. I'm going with that.
The new drip is cowboy western.
I gotta go western drip. You know what I mean?
I mean, belt buckles were a big thing in like those early 2000s. I know I had like a massive Rockaway belt buckle around that time period, but also I had like size 38 jeans.
had to.
Two pairs of jeans.
You had to take the knife and punch the hole in the belt and make the two more belt loose. Then you had the 5X t-shirt.
Yep.
Come on, man.
And then the belt buckles transitioned to the LED belt buckles out of nowhere.
Was it red shit on them?
We had the light ups and you just had it to say random things across it.
I wasn't feeling that. I ain't go that far.
Did you have one?
Yeah, I did.
What did it say, though?
He had a fanny pack with one, too.
My homie had one, and he just had your mom's a tip drill on it.
Your mom's a tip drill?
That's what it said. I swear to you.
Dude, the early 2000s were a wild time.
It was a weird time. I mean, I think pretty positive Nelly had one
that
of those
in
his video as well.
So,
yeah.
I'm going to do this. So you're getting into cowboy boots, belt buckles. We're getting real leather jackets.
Wave, man.
That's the next wave,
dog. When I tell you, that's the wave. Watch this cowboy swag. It's the wave. It's like, man, we got to get back to that old western vibe. You know what I'm saying? It's that and then Levi's. You know, just that man up vibe. It's trying to like man up. You know what I'm
saying? Bolo ties.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to man up. You know, like the cowboys do. It's trying to man up, man. Go get me a horse. You know what I'm saying? Just start cruising around the country. You know what I mean? Just settling. You know, I'm settle a couple places, man. Just give me a couple of ranches.
Get
you know, yeah.
Going.
Come on, man.
Will you wear the cowboy hat on the TNT show then?
Hell yeah! I'm telling you, it's going.
Yeah,
we were watching this.
We were watching this. Like everybody's always roasting each other on the when you wore the beanie that one time.
Oh man, you know what it is? They ain't never seen that on TV in that type of setting. So. A lot of the fans is like, suit and tie and, kind of like,
Sager.
Suit and tie, corporate, you know what I mean? They kind a little older than us. And then, when people tuning in and they see me with the beanie and, they go in on Twitter and stuff, it's like, hey man, you got to come peep the whole look. You know what I mean?
Don't single out the hat.
It's so different. It's just, it's like suit. Okay. Now,
do you ever tell the other
reality,
guys?
Huh?
Yeah, do you ever tell the other guys that like maybe they need to switch it up a little
bit?
No.
That's their style, man. Yeah, everybody represent their
era. So everybody
era.
Shows up the day of, and you're just kind of like, I'm feeling a beanie today, and they're just like, all right, we're gonna we're gonna cut ass on that on air.
They just, you know, they just man, it'd really be the fans on Twitter.
It's more than that.
Yeah, and then you know you're dealing with Isaiah, Chris Webber, and Shaq, all them dudes, they ain't got nothing but jokes. So they're like, yo, you gonna go out there with that hat on? I'm like, yeah, dog, this is swag, this is the way. And Zeke like, all right, I guess.
Yeah, Zeke, I was very surprised. Like, he does not hold back.
Nah, like, Zeke is dope, man. He goes in. You know, when you had a type of career that he had, right? And, you know, you're the type of player that he was. Like, you can say whatever you want, right? You are in the upper echelon of the elite. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like who gonna talk smack back to Zeke?
But do you feel like you're obligated, or sometimes you're kind of like, okay, let me just let them say what they say? Or do you like, no, like, this is, I'm from LA, like, we're playing the dozens right now.
Nah, you know, it's they know I'm funny.
Yeah.
So and they know I'm a good sport. So, you know, on the show it's just more so me just kind of because I am like the younger one on the show, is, you know, I just kind of pay my respect. respects.
You just let
them know. They know, like, because, you know, and also, like, for me, you know, it's only my second year, so I can't be up there just being silly. I, like, the first year I was kind of like silly. This year I kind of, you know, start breaking down the games and just, you know, just trying to find my rhythm and my swerve, you know. But if they let me do it, it'd be nothing but jokes, you know, right. And then it wouldn't be no show because everybody be laughing. So I just, you know, I just try and contain myself and try and pick the right time, you know, to joke on somebody. Usually I like to joke on the dudes, on the fans who like tweet in and like Instagram in. That'd be cool.
So, yeah, you always have the ammo, basically. It's there.
Man, you're just storing it up. You got the ammo, right?
It's true. And you mentioned that you've only been doing the TNT stuff for like 2 years. You've had kind of like a really cool, we were talking about this as well, like the post-sports career. Like, you seem like one of those dudes that didn't want to be limited by like the 8 to 10 career path, right?
Yeah.
What was it like, how, because you've done what, movies, you've got the Black Santa Initiative, mm-hmm. you got like Stick Media.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to transition out of like the athlete career and do all this other stuff?
Man, it's super, you know, it's hard because, you know, that's what you do all your life. So you've prepared yourself, right, for this, like, walking into this profession that, like, happens in a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you're done, either you, like, stay in, you know what I mean? And that, you know, that is just what completes your life, right? And you're in that industry, you're in that lane, you know, which is great because it's a big family. Or you go, you know, you go out and venture, you know, and so for me, it was just like, I got to learn who I am, right? I got to figure out, like, who I am just in case, like, this don't happen the way it's supposed to happen for me, you know? But also to be able to tap in and build the same type of, you know what I mean, camaraderie
right.
other people doing other things. And now where I'm at is just really just, you know, just understanding, like, you know, my lane, right, where I can assist, where I can participate. And now it's just, you know, it's all starting to make sense for me, you know, as far as, like, you know, how to, I can be an analyst and be funny. I can go make a movie. You know, I can launch a platform like Slick Media, which is sports, lifestyle, and culture. And people respect it because they know that, you know, I've paid my dues inside the culture, you know, not just as a basketball player, but also as, you know, somebody who, you know, hangs out and, you know, participates in other type of art forms and entertainment forms. So
do you have a lot of younger players that have, like, reached out to you for, like, kind of like guidance stuff?
Yeah, a lot of young dudes is, you know, in the league, they doing well, and, you know, creative minds and people like that. And for me, it's like now, because I get to kind of sit on the outside, it's like to build something for them to be able to voice their stories, you know what I mean, their creativity while they're playing, right? And not necessarily have to wait till they're retired to, like, then figure out, like, oh, man, remember that movie I wanted to make? Or, you know, I wanted to direct a commercial and I never got a chance. Well, you know, with Slick, we want to provide that for, you know, well, the athletes in the side. Yeah, while you're in it, man, so you can have that, you can learn and you grow and you can actually, you know, have a trade, right? And have an outside talent when it's when your talent is no longer needed.
Yeah, we had a few MBAers a week or two ago come by the office just for a job shadowing program. Yeah. We had Emmanuel from the Knicks, Harrison from the Grizzlies, just hanging out. But even them, like they're 22, 23, young guys. We were asking them similar questions, like what do you want to do post-MBA? And for them, it was just, it's hard to even think that far ahead. Like the NBA is just all of their life. Yeah. Like how are you able to even have that mindset that you know, to think 10 years ahead or think after retirement?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was all about survival. You know, a kid from South Central who kind of just like found a way to make a way to like find an opportunity to make an opportunity. And so, you know, once I got to the league when I was young, I was thinking about how am I going to survive just in case this don't work.
Right.
And so I jumped out of like the traditional agency in that world. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be my own agent, man. I'm going to start my own agency and my own company. And I think I was like 22 years old. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew that I needed to protect myself, right? And the best way to protect myself was to be my own best representation of me.
Right, right.
Right? So if I did miss out on something, I knew that, you know, I was maximizing what I could, you know, for myself. And my play was going to dictate, you know, anyway, like what my value was. So I didn't really need nobody to talk for me. I could speak for myself.
Right.
You know, and I let my game speak for itself. And now being young, right, that don't always work, right? You learn a lot, right? Because when you're young, you'll say anything, right? And then especially when you're young and got some money. And you represent yourself, so
you know, have that platform.
Post game interviews, and you're like sitting there, like, man, they're asking me about it. If I think the Earth is flat again,
so you know, it was all like a learning lesson. And I think even them kids just coming up here and shadowing, you know, it's just like that's taking the first step of having some responsibility for who you are and what you want to do.
Yeah, and I mean, how much do you think that culture from like when you were in the league has changed now? Like, do you think people are
you
a lot
know, these
more?
Kids are hungrier, they have more access, more opportunity, they're well traveled, you know, they're groomed and prepared more.
Mm-hmm.
They're more taken care of, you know, as far as like medically and just like with the NBA, the way they travel and the amenities and, you know, just like the different level of respect that the teams have for the players now is a lot different than before. So, you know, it's good.
I think there's just been so much talk about like how the NBA approaches like players that want to be activists or people that want to like speak out. You know what I mean? Because like, especially among American sports, it's probably the most like at the forefront of stuff like that. Do you think that there's sort of like they encourage it or they kind of like fostering it?
No, I think they treat us like people, man. You know, and because it is a league, we all work together. We are a family. We all know each other. Like, it's hard to see your brother being affected by something, right? And not have the opportunity or feel ashamed that he cannot voice his, you know, his take on what he feels, you know, is his responsibility. And so I think when you start looking at basketball, right, and you start looking at sports in general, you know, you start looking at sports through a different lens, right, as the way the world should look, right, you know, almost like a collage of, you know, just different people from different walks of life, right, because when you play sports, if you're good at the sport, you're good at the sport, right,
yeah.
If you're on the team, right, and you're the water boy, right? You're on the team. You're in the sport, right? You know, if you're a scorekeeper or a referee, right? And, you know, you both are from, you know, rival neighboring countries, right? And you're refereeing the game, the soccer game, the basketball game, you're in the game.
Yeah.
You're refereeing, you know, and so, and you're in the sport. And so what the sport is teaching us is that we don't really see, you know, color. We don't really see, a lot of gender issues. If you can hoop, you can hoop, right? And so the players in the game, right, we are accepting and loving because we've always had to. We've always had to, as athletes, adapt to people, adapt to fans, be accepting of all, show compassion. You know what I mean? Be givers, be people who give back. And I think if the world were to really like start to look at sports through a different lens, if you look at the Olympics, like what stops war? The Olympics, of all things, yeah. Right? And, you know, that right there speaks volumes to, you know, how we could use sports and sports activism.
It's like that Vice documentary where they send the Globetrotters to like North Korea.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. Like Dennis Rodman went, ain't nobody been, you know, messing with Ken Jeong but Dennis Rodman, and he's sitting there and he a fan, right? So it's like, it's crazy. It's just crazy the opportunities that we have and the platform that we have and how we are kind of capped, right? And limited from, you know, sometimes from mainstream media about what we can say or do or what is expected out of us.
So is that what kind of segued you, like just having that mindset and that thought led you to, you know, the Black Santa initiative? Is that just about having representation for not only your players, but for your brothers and sisters? And
I mean, with Black Santa, it to me, it was just deeper than that. It was like, you know, you're looking at these world issues and you're looking at, you know, police brutality and you're looking at, you know, hate crimes and you're looking at just, you know, African-Americans in general and just our whole historical journey to this point in society. And, you know, my thing was we still don't trust ourselves or we still don't have a trusting figure, right? Or a cartoon or a superhero or, you know, something to actually look up to that has a sense of purity.
Like a right? Wholesome pop culture.
Yeah, wholesome, like we don't, there's nothing in mainstream media or pop culture that represents us in a wholesome, fun, jolly, giving way, right? And so my thing was like, man, I need to really understand how to create solutions, right? And, you know, instead of being a protester, right, I'll just be a fixer. And, you know, I fight for the content that I create, yeah. Right? Because if I'm allowed to, you know, have that vehicle and have that pipeline, then imagine all the like-minded people I can find that are doing, you know, similar, if not better things to push through that pipeline. And so for me, it was, you know, the Black Santa was about presenting something in the culture that represented positivity in an underserved community, that represented like giving, that represented all these like great, incredible, you know, positive buzzwords that could, you know, that heals wounds, right? And also can help to start reimagining the mind. So a big thing, one of our big things is dream. And, you know, it's really allowing kids and allowing people to see things that they've never seen before. And not because it has to be like a slave story or somebody's life rights or, you know, it should be something that you've never, ever heard or seen before, right? And once we allow our kids to do that, then we allow them to, you know, see themselves in a different light and want to be more and want to be different, right? Than what they would necessarily see on TV. And then once we celebrate ourselves and see the positivity, then other cultures start looking at us different. And they'll see, you know, how we celebrate ourselves, how we portray ourselves in a positive light, and then they'll start doing the same thing. And so at that point, really, we're only looking at all of the great things that we can do together and the great things that we are as people. And if we celebrate those and bring those to life through storytelling, through animation and things like that, then for me, it that's my remedy.
Wow. Boom. Here's a bit of a change of pace, but we found out you were a producer on a film with Stacy Peralta called the Crips and the Bloods, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Made in America.
Made in America. We wanted to know a little bit more. What, first of all, what was working with Stacy Peralta like? And were you on set for that? Were you like, for lack of a better phrase, but were you like, were you on site for the movie and the shoot?
Yeah. So, one, it was a joy to work with Stacy Peralta. We connected because, you know, it was a bunch of shootings that had happened in Venice, and he was like, you know, he wanted, you know, he was like, yo, I want, this is crazy. Like, I've never, you know, this is getting out of control. I want to do something about it. And I was like, yo, I'm from here. I've been living this. You know what I mean? This is a part of, like, my life and my daily fabric. And I've been trying to make a movie about gangs because I got homeboys, you know. I got OGs that are misconceived, right? And I wanted to make a movie that gave the gang member an opportunity to speak. An opportunity to speak, to see, so people can see them, and so they can also see themselves. And there's never really been a documentary where you see, you know, it's always like a narrator or one dude walking you through his hood, and it's like, you know, you like get attached to that person, but you never really hear from the gang members and what they're going through,
right,
and things like that. And so that's why I set out to make that movie. One, it was just because, you know, I grew up in LA, you know, I grew up seeing gangs, you know, being around it, you know what I mean? And having friends who were, you know, deeply in it, family who were deeply in it. And it was just like, man, what could our solve be, you know? And the thought was, you know, through content, at least these guys can start seeing themselves, start hearing themselves, and wanting to change. And also show the world that, like, yo, like, this is, like, this is a real problem, homeboy. This is, like, every time I want to pick up the one as and go get a job, some guns and some coke get dropped off. And you know what I mean? It's just, like, you know, things like that. And so it's like, how can we help solve? Like, how can we help remedy a situation? And so for me, it was sort of like my give back to the hood and to LA in general, was to be able to, like, open up this story, right? So now people have opportunities to tell their story from their hood and how they want to change and do things like that.
So you're saying, you said Stacy, you know, there was gang violence in, like, Venice, so it kind of, like, seeped into his neighborhood, and that's when he kind of became aware of it all?
Yeah, or? I mean, but Venice get down, you know? So Venice got hoods, too. And that's the crazy thing about L.A. is you see the palm trees and feel the breeze, and you be in Venice, and, you know, you can get caught slipping. I think what happened was it woke him up because I guess it became close to him.
Yeah, right. It touches home.
Right, yeah. And I think when things like that, you know, strike you in your neighborhood and you start to pay attention. Once you start paying attention, you like, damn, this is like an ongoing thing.
Yeah, this has been going on for 30 years.
For a long time, yeah. And so when we connected, it was just both with a shared passion, and it was just, you know, me like trusting his vision to bring that about. And I thought he did a great job of just, you know, capturing the historical, you know, the historical landscape of why, right? How, why.
The systemic reasons,
we
right?
Got, yeah, so many reasons how we got there, why we got there. And I just thought the documentary was, you know, for the first one, was good to inform, right, and to wake people up. And so we're coming back with another one.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so we're going to do a part two, and not with Stacy, but a different director, but a part two about, you know, where are we now, and, like, from a musical standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, you know, how we can, like, fix it and solve it.
Yeah, I feel like that entire, the gang narrative in California especially has changed so much from, like, when it was rough and tumble. Like, now it's, like, they're turning out all of the biggest music artists in the world right now.
Right.
And the most outspoken, you know, like YG, Nipsey, like, they're, you know, Kendrick Lamar, like, and all these politically guys. Aware. Yeah, Kendrick, you know, like, they're probably the artists that are more outspoken than most,
right,
you know?
Right. And, you know, L.A. has always had that, you know what I mean? We've always had that. It's just, you know, we get our turn, we get our shot again in hip-hop. And I think with this new wave, you know, with K-Dot, Schoolboy, you know, Nip, YG, all them dudes, Dom Kennedy, it's like everybody got their voice, their style, and they all, you know, they all fuck with each other. And that's the cool thing is that, you know, you see them kind of like they got their own camaraderie, right? And they all, you know, in each other, on each other's songs and videos, but they've been doing that since they was kids. And I just think that it's good for the city, you know, and they're a great representation of, like, you know, what we're going through in the city of L.A. still to this day.
Do you fuck with mumble rap?
I don't understand what, like, mumble rap is. You know what I mean? Like, people, I like the music I listen to, and if it's mumble rap, then hell yeah, they should be smacking. Like, but like, who's a mumble rapper?
No, see, like they've just started referring to every rapper that's below 23 years old as a mumble rapper now. I think, like, yeah, it's like, oh, if you're like Lil Pump, Lil Uzi Vert, Playboy Cardi, like if you're one of those dudes whose dreadlocks change color every 3 weeks, they're kind of like, yo, you're a mumble rapper.
It's very comparable to like what NBA vets do or like retired players do. It's like any of the new wave of basketball players, it's like, oh man, that style of play is soft. You know what I mean? Like it happens almost in every
industry.
Like Lil
Baby, he ain't mumble rap.
No.
Young Thug ain't mumble rap.
See, that's the thing. A lot of people would call him that because they can't understand what he's saying, but I don't think he's mumble rap at all.
I can't understand either, but he be jamming, though.
That shit slaps. That's
it. But he be saying some dope shit, though, when you know. Who else is mumble rap?
Oh, man, it's like, I mean, every young rapper. Like, literally, it's like I guess nobody called Lil Nudy a mumble rapper. O3 Greedo wasn't a mumble rapper.
Nah,
but like,
you know, what about Lil Pinch?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm
up on a little pitch.
Yeah, who are you up on now?
Who's
inform
in your top
us.
Five right now?
Inform us.
In my new top five?
Yeah. If you had a six-disc CD changer in your car right now.
Nah, man, because it's going to be hella West Coast bias. If I'm thinking of, like, my little homeboy out of Alabama, he called. OMB Peasy.
OMB Peasy is great, yo. The fucking Creek Boys.
Yeah, he fry. I would say him.
Peasy kind of sounds like a young Lil Boosie to me.
Yeah, he right? called. Black Youngster.
He's great.
I mean, of course, Nipsey, Kendrick, all them dudes, they just like, they ain't
West Coast guys have spots.
They already got spots. Damn, dude.
You can give out one more cosign. Like, now you've got like.
G Perico is hard.
Yeah, see, that's the LA bias.
But that ain't like, that's LA bias. So, Davies.
Davies
hard.
Is good. There you go. There's a New Yorker.
I like Davies. I like, I like all the dudes coming out of Chicago. I like Dirk and all them. My boy T Grizzly,
T Grizzly's great.
Who else, man? Who else? Them the Memphis boys. Moneybag.
Moneybag, yo. Yeah, he's great. Rich Pablo Juan, the entire. That's awesome. So wait, here's a couple of NBA questions because you spend a lot of time on the road. You're still on the road a lot. What's like what's the go-to, like if you need a place to eat in any given city, what's your like go-to fast food spot?
I think you're going to have to say like probably Waffle House or some shit like that. Waffle House. If it's like consistently in every city, it's probably like Waffle House is fast food. Pizza, dog. Pizza for me. Just find a cool pizza spot no matter where you're from.
Yeah, you got to let them go get pizza here, though.
Huh?
In New York, yeah. You got like, what's your favorite slice of New York pizza?
Oh, man, just pepperoni.
Yeah, see?
And cheese. I ain't with all the... none of the mushrooms and all that shit. All that stuffing,
extra
toppings,
shit, artichokes,
bell peppers.
No.
Nah, you can probably like pineapples or like, you know, olives. You can't really taste no olives for decoration or something. All right, no, pepperoni and jalapenos, that's bomb. I had that before.
Bro, there's a
barbecue chicken pizza is good.
That's 10 out of 10. I'm talking like there's weird ones in New York. Like there's one in Brooklyn where they have a pizza with little pizzas on it. You ever seen that?
A pizza with
what?
With
little pizzas on it.
Like
with
bagel
little
bites?
Pizza? You ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
With little pizzas?
I might have to Google it. Yeah. It's like they put like the little like the bagel bite, kind of like the one bite pizzas on top of a huge
That's terrible.
Oh, man. Wait, I'll show it to you. Cause
that sounds horrible.
It sounds horrible, and then you see it, and you're like, I could do a slice.
How much is that?
I don't know. I'm going to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
In Brooklyn, probably like $12 a slice.
Brooklyn, like $20 a slice. You got to wait 4 hours for a slice of pizza. Man, y'all New Yorkers, man, it'd be gas out here. It'd be like, yo, the pizza is amazing. You go to the pizza spot, you be waiting 5 hours for a slice of pizza.
Like it's street.
Everybody waiting outside like it ain't, you know, like it's normal. Like, it ain't normal to get 5 hours. Domino's delivering 30 minutes, dog.
Yeah, Domino's. Yeah,
what's
Domino's.
What's the difference?
Is,
why do y'all do that out here in New York, man? Why do y'all
line
do?
For
why do y'all go to like the ice? You know, it'd be an ice cream shop, and it'd be like 100 people outside, like waiting in line for the ice cream. It's like, come on, dude.
Häagen-Dazs.
It's an ice cream shop around the corner too.
Yeah, Häagen-Dazs had free ice cream day last week. The line was literally like two blocks long. Like,
for sure.
It's just free ice cream. Like, you can get a dollar ice cream just from the truck.
I'm pretty convinced that everything in New York is just an excuse for a line.
No, like there's, for sure. Everything is like a pop-up. Everything, like,
yeah, they'll turn everything.
You walking down the street like, damn, what's that? Oh, people line up going to a furniture store. Like, yeah. Shit. Like,
across the block, they had Hebrew Brantley and Virgil had a pop-up.
Word?
Like, both
back
in the same week. Like, literally days apart. The same
y'all,
building.
Y'all in a good location. You cop something?
The Virgil one was the IKEA collab, and I don't really have.
They
a
weren't
nice
selling
enough,
that. Yeah.
I don't have a nice enough apartment for that stuff.
Oh, he showed it.
Yeah.
It was like they like showed off the big blue rug that says red or whatever, and then they had like it's like the chair with the interrupted like doorstop thing on it, and he's like walking around with some like really polite Swedish dude, and they're like walking you through how they
was
made
it
all
fresh.
It's pretty fresh. I mean, I would get one of the rugs. I think the rugs are like you might want to look that up because it's IKEA prices like. I can't afford most of the stuff that Virgil Abloh decides to make.
No, except for
the Nikes. If I can get like a chair for like $60, I might do that.
Yeah. Well, and because it's collector?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's. I mean, I don't know how limited they're gonna make it. It's probably gonna be like the off-white shoes, where it's like 15 seconds and they're
with
gone.
With the rugs that say "keep off."
Yeah, that one, and then they have this blue. Huge red one that says blue on it. I mean, those are both cool. I mean, I would get a Virgil Abloh rug, I think.
Yeah, I usually see you on TNT rocking the Virgil Nikes.
Nah, I mess with Virgil. He's a dope designer, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about him, his new appointment?
I think that's
LV, right?
I think that's going to be super fresh. I'm excited to see what it is. It's like, you know, you're looking at a dude who kind of like took pop culture and leveled it up and made it classy. You know, and really like just gave it to the youth,
right.
You know, and so now I think it's smart for him to go and do something like that is take a old brand that's always had, you know, its moment in our culture and do it again. You know, this Kia collection is dope.
You can get some for the crib?
Yeah, I'm going to get some for sure.
Boom, you heard it
here
first.
Is it expensive?
Nah, it's IKEA prices. That's the real, that's the kicker.
That's how I'm about to win with the IKEA prices.
Cop all. Add to cart now.
I see you ain't made no coasters. All right, I'm about to hit IKEA and get my cut, go do a collab on some coasters and some water bottles for the house.
IKEA's are actually a friend of the pod, so we'll put you in touch.
Come on, IKEA, man, come too.
That's so.
Would that be like a dream collab? Like, what would be a dream collab for BED?
If I were to work with a brand, a dream collaboration would be. Damn, that's a good one, dog. That's a good question. Nobody ever asked me that.
The thing is, you're on Hypebeast. So that if you say it, it might actually happen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you would think it would be toys or something like that. Be like a toy company, I would say.
Like Metacom.
Like the Bear Bricks. You know what it is?
Huh?
Like, you seen the Bear Bricks? Like a Black Santa Bear Brick? That might be kind of fire.
That'd be fire. That'd be kind of fire.
See, the thing
we
is,
can
we'll
do that at
we'll make that happen.
Complex Con.
Oh, man, you're not going to shout out Complex Con here, are you? Oh, that hurts.
Y'all competitors?
Slightly.
I'm going to ask y'all a question. Why y'all beefing with Complex?
Oh, no, it's not beef. It was no. No.
Yeah, now.
Oh, uh-oh. No.
Is this where the show turns?
Charlemagne you, Bob.
I have questions. I have questions. There's no beef.
No, there's no beef.
No, it's just industry shit. You know how that goes.
Yeah, and like when you say industry shit, for
we
someone
just
like me
across
who
the
don't
room.
Understand what the industry is, like when you like, You know, because it's like y'all all in this, you know, this together. Ecosystem yeah. together. Yeah. And, you know, it's different, like in sports, like we all play in the NBA, but like we all competitive as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so.
It's like we have like game time, like 9 to 6, where it's like, you know, you're like sort of like. Yeah.
And then you see you gotta have the paper on, you yeah. know, you creating your own stuff that you think like. Oh, they stole my play. Like, damn, that was something out of my playbook. Or,
yeah, you know, that happens.
This dude was over here. He was lazy, but he over there balling. You know, it's like,
yeah, absolutely. That happens. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's just like friendly competition. Like, I don't go home at night and like kick my trash can over or anything yeah. because of that. Like, we see each other all out, like, at like those various events because it is yeah. like, it is very tight knit. We're all going to the same thing. And right. it's always love. Like, it's never. Never a big deal like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, yeah, everybody has like their level of like different content they put out. So we all have like our own lanes.
Yeah. And what do you consider your lane?
Man, I would say we're mostly streetwear. Streetwear and fashion is our main our main slides. Yeah, the bag for sure. Yeah. But we had like Seth Rogen on the pod a couple weeks ago, and he was saying he usually just comes to our site for art. Like street art, graffiti art.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is that like the name of the website is like basically the people that read it. So it's like we can't really pin it down to one thing because it's absolutely. Like, yo, there's some people that are infinitely more interested in sneakers than they are in fashion. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
and there's some people that only care about street art, and there's like some people that really just care about Kanye West. You know what
and
I mean?
And like, how do you get how do you start something like this, or how do you get a job at a place like this? Like, if I'm a young person. You know, and I'm
that's
listening.
What the NBA guys were coming in for.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, of course. It's like they ask me that shit all the time, but it's like, you can say practice. Like, I know what to tell them, like, practice, work on your game, but, you know, there is an NBA, but like, how do you get to a place like this? What do you have to have? Like, you know, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of stumbled
into it. How did you get,
I was like, I was interning in magazines since I was like, first came to New York. Like, I was like. In the mailroom of like arts and fashion magazines doing like remember when like at the beginning of like Spider-Man when he was just working at the newspaper and it was like no one knew who he was. It's kind of like that. Like I just hauled magazines into the back of offices.
That's
and like
dope.
No one would make eye contact with you. And so I was like, man, this sucks. Like I wasn't getting paid. Like it was like for several magazines where it was just like they needed a runner. And I was like, all right, I want to be in the magazine. Like I don't want to be just handing it to people. Yeah. And so I just started like writing shit, and then you start off doing that for free, like either on your own blog or something like that, like Twitter, and you just like make noise, like literally like the same way that I'm assuming like people in other industries have to like get people to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, it takes years though. It took years for me to actually get paid for like writing stuff. It took years.
What was the thing I saw on like your Twitter the other day, Ben, where it's like you have to have like your... You know, you're a photographer, you're in photo, like you have to have these skills in Photoshop.
Yeah. That was like Dan Ozzie from Vice said this thing where he's like, yeah, you can get a career, you're like eligible for a career in media, but you got to be like proficient at Photoshop, CMS, WordPress, podcasting, have an Adderall prescription. You got to be like doing 18 different things.
No, for sure.
I think part of it is like a matter of, you know, just taste. Like taste is something that you can't be like.
Yeah.
Taught immediately, you know, that's something that's like you build over time, something that you grow up with, something that's like part of your family or whatever interest you have over the time. But you know, yeah, also it is, you know, being
like
a good writer,
like do it for free until like you can tell someone to pay you and they're gonna listen to you, because like that was the hardest lesson, was literally being like, yo, I shouldn't be doing this for free anymore, which I think probably basketball players might understand because the NCAA, you know what I mean, like just like one of those things where you're like, yo, I'm putting a number on the board.
Yeah, it's time to go get paid for doing this. Like, I'm good enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think it's like, it's sort of like, yeah, I don't know. There's no one playbook. It's like, again, I started off writing stuff and now I just do podcasts. So it's like, go with it and don't worry if someone tells you like, yo, your job is this now. Just do it that way and then follow through with it. And like, you'll probably end up doing all right. I think that's for all of the interns listening right now.
Take note, please.
All 15 of y'all.
Take notes. That's dope shit.
Yeah. Now, usually when we're kind of winding down, tying up loose ends, we always try to like get this one question in where it's like, yo, if you could go back, if you get like a time machine, right? You go back and you can talk to like 13-year-old Baron Davis and offer one piece of advice, one piece of constructive criticism. What would it be and why?
I would tell him to keep your head down and don't listen to nobody. Trust yourself. You're going to make all the right decisions. Don't let anybody influence you. Just like just work, just do what you want, and it'll happen.
Boom. Wisdom from the beard. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for dropping by.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, and we're good.
Appreciate it.